Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tainus Hoopers family. Today, I am here with Jack Borman, Tainus Hoopers contributor, friend of the show. We're going to talk preseason because that is what we've just finished. Wolves went 3-1 in the preseason. It was overall, I'd say, a pretty successful exhibition season to talk about whatever. We don't really have an outline here. We're just going to go for it and talk about the things we liked, the things we didn't like, and kind of branch off from there. So, Jack, how's it doing, man?
I'm doing well. It was nice to have Timberwolves basketball back. A really quick turnaround from the Lynx season. But, man, there is just nothing like overreacting to all of the positive things that happen in Timberwolves games in the preseason. It's just incredible. Like, I think back the last two seasons, I've been like, man, like, shit, this is a pretty good team. And then it's just like everything goes to hell in a handbasket. And here we are again, you know, putting the clown paint on our faces and feeling the good vibes and, you know, and just gearing up for another, you know, another soulless hobby that consumes 82 nights of our year, and I can't wait.
That was a very good way to put it, because it is a soulless hobby. And I you mentioned this to me before we started recording, that it's hard to kind of decipher what's real and what's fake from the preseason, and that's what I've kind of spent all four games trying to siphon through and figure out what's just preseason weirdness and what actually drags over to the regular season. Is there, I mean, let's start with some good stuff, because that's, you know, we all love the good things in the preseason. Is there, what's something that stood out to you the most, and do you think it's real? Do you think it's fake? Like, is there something that really stands out for you coming from that preseason?
Yeah, I'll throw two things out. One is a team and one is a player. So, you know, as a player, I think the one that stood out to me, obviously, the most is D'Angelo Russell. You know, I think a lot of people would point to Anthony Edwards and his defense, and I think that that's going to be, you know, obviously really valuable. But the way that D'Angelo Russell has been really engaged on the glass and really been wanting to grab rebounds, whether they're, you know, short or long, but grab live ball rebounds and just rock it up the floor, because he's honestly one of the best you know, playmakers in the NBA, most skilled passers in the NBA, in the way that he's able to fit balls in tight spaces and, you know, and just see the entire floor really, really well and make quick decisions. But then when you're in transition and you can kind of open things up, you know, we've really seen the way that he's been able to pressure defenses. You know, he's able to score all three levels in transition. But, you know, now the Timberwolves have two really, really good transition spot up shooters, and Malik Beasley is one of the best in the entire NBA, and you know, and Taurean Prince, who has proven to be really valuable. So the way that he, I think, has really controlled the tempo of those first three preseason games that he played in was something that stood out to me. Looked really comfortable in screen and roll with Kat. He also did a really good job of really trying to get downhill. You know, I noticed right away, I haven't looked at any of the numbers, but it looked like he was more assertive to try and get to the rim and get to the foul line. And when he's able to do that, I think that that's a sign that he's really healthy and he's confident in his game, and where he's at. And two, just knowing that, you know, when you've got two guys that have really legit scoring gravity in Kat and Anthony Edwards, who are most likely going to be, you know, focus 1A and focus 1B of defenses this year, I think him realizing that he's going to, you know, have good matchups and be able to get to his spots is great. So D'Lo has really stood out to me as a positive in the preseason. And then as a team, you know, kind of going off of that, I've noticed that the Timberwolves have really gotten out and run, like just, you know, like somebody almost kind of like the running of the Bulls where, you know, there's just, you know, some are like, I don't know, like the fucking, like, I don't know, the it clown just like showing up and just like everybody taking off running towards the basket. But yeah, I mean, I first saw it. I remember asking Kat, I think the Timberwolves played the Pelicans in like the first weekend of May or something like that. And I remember asking Kat after the game, if they were deliberately not like letting him get the rebound, but let him get the rebound so that he could really push the pace up himself, or immediately get the ball to D'Lo so they could push the pace, and really started to notice that at the end of last season. I think they're really carrying that over into this season that, you know, no matter who gets the ball off the, you know, off the rebound, whether, especially if it's a guard, that those guys are just going to fly up the floor. And I think it was it the third preseason game? Who'd they play in the third preseason game?
Clippers.
Clippers, yeah. So it was in the Clippers game where, you know, I think I looked it up, you know, and in that first half, I think they had as many fast break points in that first half as they'd had in any first half last season. And then in the last game, you know, they were just dominating in the points in the paint. A lot of that has to do with just getting out and running. Yeah, just being able to create easy shots for yourself by getting out and running is going to be huge for the Timberwolves this year. And if it can kind of be organized chaos on the break where you can kind of get teams to play at your pace as opposed to you, you know, being forced to play at another team's pace, I think that's a sign of a team that that's going to win some games.
It's funny because we're usually on the same page, but this might be our pinnacle of being on the same page because I have about two notes written down, and the first two were D'Angelo Russell and transition offense. And that, like, that's the two things that have stood out to me as well. Like, and I think they intertwine together, that D'Lo getting boards and looking more spry and looking to get up the floor quickly and not kind of meander into possessions that take 6-7 seconds before you even set that first pick and roll screen. Like, that all plays into that fast-paced offense, and I think that's where this team is at its best, because I don't think they're going to have many problems in the half-court offensively, but they look the best when they can get out in transition. D'Lo can hit transition threes. He's obviously, as you said, a really good passer on the break. We know Kat can either play the role as a guy who runs the break or who finishes the break. Anthony Edwards, like, you look at the stats, he's top five in transition scoring in the preseason, points off turnovers, points in the paint, you know, for wings. It's all that stuff. Like, Anthony Edwards has struggled with his jumper, I think, in general, and even probably struggled a little bit in the half court with his rim finishing. But if you play fast, Anthony Edwards is going to get 8 to 10 points in transition per night. And that is massive for this team, and that all stems from D'Lo wanting to play quick. It stems from guys who get the rebound, making that quick hit ahead pass straight away. Like if it's Taurean Prince gets a rebound, he's going straight to half court straight away. He's not kind of, you know, dribbling, taking a few quick dribbles and then slowing the play down so they can get into a half court set. It's always been push. And that's, yeah, I just think that's really important for this team, because as much as they have offensive talents, they, like, you need easy buckets. They're easy buckets, and Anthony Edwards, like, genuinely might be the best transition player in the league, or he's definitely in the top 10. And if you have that, you really have to, like, tap into that well that you have. And then you have, like you said, spot up shooters like Prince and Beasley. Kat's gonna do anything he wants. D'Lo can hit pull up threes and can hit spot up threes in transition. So that's definitely the one thing that stood out to me as well. How real it is, I'm not sure, only because preseason is just so, I think it's Twitter in general, I think there's way more turnovers, and turnovers, obviously, like, live ball turnovers lead to fast breaks more often. Teams are more sloppy just in the half court playing, you know, pick and roll offense. You'll see Anthony Edwards and Josh Okogie and Pat Beverly get a lot of steals, I think, throughout the regular season as well, but I think it's amplified in the preseason when everyone's kind of going at 60%. So I think they'll play fast. They played fast last season under both Saunders and Finch, but I think this is a different type of fast because if you can force live ball turnovers with this new scheme and really have a lot of guys who can get deflections and get the ball out in transition, then those live ball turnovers lead to points as well, and that's where it's different to just running up the floor quickly and getting into a quick set.
Yeah, and I think I think that Rosas was so big on playing fast, but not necessarily playing, you know, quickly or like a controlled fast. I think it was just
He wanted the pace rating to be high. Whereas I think Finch wants to play fast, but in a way that you play fast when you can get opportunities to play fast. You don't have to play fast all the time, but when the opportunity is there off a long rebound, off a live ball turnover, that's when you can actually turn that pace into profit.
And that's something that I think we're going to see that's real in the sense that, you know, I think every single player on the Timberwolves roster, when there was a rebound that went up, you know, missing a shot and rebounding is basketball. You know, whether it's preseason, regular season, playoffs, it doesn't matter. You know, teams are generally going to be as aggressive on the offensive glass, you know, in any of those settings as they normally would be. And I think that especially if the Timberwolves aren't really playing with a true four, D'Angelo Russell is 6'5 or 6'6, you know, depending on, you know, how flubbed the numbers are. I don't know, but he looks pretty big. And, you know, he seems like a guy that you know, wants to actually rebound and grab the ball and run it up the floor so he can make plays and get other guys going. And when you got a point guard that's willing to do that, I think that really helps. And it helps too that Cat is an awesome outlet passer. And when you can combine those things, it's just going to be really profitable. And then too, you factor in that D'Angelo Russell is one of the league's better pull-up jump shooters. And you've got a player that can, you know, that can really be a weapon in the transition game. And I think that trying to create more of those opportunities will be big. You don't have to wait for them to come. It doesn't have to be a live ball turnover and all of a sudden you've got a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1 fast break. If, you know, and we saw it with the Timberwolves last year and 2 years ago where we're just yelling at our computers or our TV screens or at the court on the, you know, in the arena, just wondering, just dumbfounded why these guys aren't running back on defense. And if you can catch other teams doing the same thing or tiring out other teams by just simply really pushing the pace whenever you possibly can off a live ball rebound, I think that that's going to be really, really great for this team. Because even if you run it up there and then you realize, okay, no, we don't have anything, let's just pull it back, that's still putting pressure on the defense and you know, could potentially cause you know, defenses to be in, you know, incorrect matchups, kind of in a scramble, and forced to play, you know, kind of a shell defense, you know, or you have a mismatch right away because teams can't get set up the right way if you run up the floor quickly. And so, you know, even if you're not getting those transition points, I still think that there's, you know, other positive things that can come about of pushing a rebound up the floor. And I think of anything that we've seen, I think that's going to be the most real thing. You know, Anthony Edwards' defense, you know, could just be a nightly thing, you know, if he wants to play defense or he's playing well offensively, maybe it shows up and then maybe it wanes if he's having an off night. But I feel most strongly in saying that the transition offense off live ball rebounds and turnovers is going to stick around.
I don't think there's any more of like kind of obvious point of emphasis, like a way to see that was a point of emphasis than like Naz Reid running fast breaks off rebounds. Like Vando, as soon as Vando got a rebound, he's off to the races, at least getting the ball over half court. And I think that's a great point that you made, that like if anything, you're just forcing cross matches. You're just prodding at the weak spots of the defense and seeing which one's gonna burst, you know? And maybe that means that you just pull it back and you run a set and nothing happens. But if 5-10 times a night you get the ball over half court quickly and the other team's cross-matched or you find a little weak spot in the defense, like, that's massive, especially when you have three offensive talents like Cat, D'Lo, and Russell, because those guys can punish mismatches, that's a tongue twister, and they can do it consistently. And especially Ant, if you can get guys on Ant who can't guard him, you make his life a lot easier. And I still think, even with all the talent that he has and the excitement that we have for Anthony Edwards, that getting him, making his life easier should be the number one priority for the offense, because Cat can do it without making his life easier. He's done it for 7 years and nobody's ever made his life easier. D'Lo makes life hard on himself, you know, just with his game style, with the shots that he takes, and he does it well. Like, he makes tough shots. Whereas Ant, I think you need to run more plays for him that get him moving in space, or only having to take one or two dribbles before it gets to the rim. I think you want to force mismatches onto him. You want to force, you know, power forwards to be guarding him in semi-transition opportunities, because he'll blow by him and get a bucket, or he'll pull back out and he'll isolate on a guy who's 6'10". That's profitable for the Wolves, and I think that is the main thing I want to see out of the offense, is really working to create advantages for Ant and not having to make him create advantages for himself as much as kind of a star level player would, because I don't want to heap too much responsibility on him, because he's still 20, he's in his second season. I know we all think he's going to be awesome, and I really do think he's going to be awesome, but we can't be like, all right, you're Donovan Mitchell now. Go out and be Donovan Mitchell. You're Dwayne Wade now. Go out and be Dwayne Wade. Like, you have to be like, you're Anthony Edwards, a second year player. Let us make life easier for you. And one of the best ways to do that is to run in transition and just to play fast in general. Not even transition, just to hurry up the defense. And yeah, like that is the main point I had as well, which is good that we were on the same page, because I think that's just super important.
Yeah, and the one other thing that I want to add to that is that, you know, with Ant, I think we've seen it a lot in the preseason that any time that he cuts super hard to the rim,
it's almost hard to guard.
2 points. And in that, if he can do that without, needing to score first or be in the game or kind of be in the rhythm, you know, and kind of make your first few shots to stay engaged, that's going to be huge, because Finch is really, really good at running wedges to get Cat isolated, you know, post-ups where he's on an island. And if the defense wants to send another guy at him, you know, he's got time to see it coming, and other guys have time to read and react off of that. And he'll be able to hit guys. I mean, we've seen two from Cat. I mean, one of the other big takeaways I've noticed is, you know, the passing angles that Cat is able to create off the drive and out of, you know, out of post ups and double teams in the post has been incredible. And we've seen Taurean Prince make a couple of threes off of some really crazy, impressive cat passes. And now that he's got guys around him that can shoot, it's going to force defenses to be out more on the perimeter. And when that happens, the back cuts are going to open up, the cuts down the middle of the lane are going to open up. Or even if he does a lot of what Jaden McDaniels started to do at the end of last season, where he's in that slot, in the opposite slot, he can kind of cut right through the lane and collapse the back half of the defense, so somebody can, you know, throw a skip pass over the top to whoever's in that opposite corner for three. We saw that a ton last year. And whether that's Ant, Jaden, or J.O. doing that this year, that's going to be something that's huge. And we've seen it from Ant a little bit in the preseason with the cutting. But man, if that you know, goes up another level, he could average 25 points a game.
And not even try. not try, but that's the thing, is that, like, all
those things. Not have to work super hard for the 25.
Yeah, all those things, the transition, that there's 45 cuts that he makes from the slot, like, they're easy buckets, and you don't have to worry about him shooting 37% from three. And if he comes in shooting 37% from three on 7 attempts a game, he's going to average 27 a game. Like, that, but you can't bank on that, I don't think. But what you can bank on is making good cuts and playing fast and just getting him easy looks without it having to be isolation basketball. Because I think there's been a little bit too much of that in general in the preseason from a lot of players. But I also think the offense has been, there's been, you know me, I'm always looking out for plays that Finch is running. And literally, there's about four or five plays that he's been running a game in preseason, which is, I don't know if that's because he wants to play more read and react for the entire season, or if that's just because it's preseason and they're kind of going through the motions a little bit offensively, because normally Finch is running at least like 10 to 20 set plays a game, and it's been way lower than that. And I think that that was, I think it's a combination of preseason, of them wanting to play a little bit more free flowing, and also that they've been working on defense for the entire training camp, and maybe that's just, that's the focus of the game, the emphasis of the game is doing what they need to do defensively, which would make perfect sense. The 3-point shooting is one of the things that I had here as well that has been bad, but I think it's fake. It's you look at the, it's actually wild. Like, you look at the shooting numbers. I think Minnesota are shooting 30% from three in the preseason. Yeah, in the preseason, that's their 27th ranked 3-point, you know, field goal percentage of in the league. You look at last season, Boston shot 22.6% from three in the preseason. They finished 10th in 3-point shooting in the regular season. Milwaukee shot 27.9%, finished 5th. Philly, 30%, finished 11th. New York, 30.3%, finished 3rd in percentage in the regular season. Like, this doesn't, it doesn't matter. Historically, it doesn't matter what teams shoot in the preseason. Like, Bradley Beal shot 8% in the preseason last season.
8?
From 3. 8. Like, single digit 8. Jason Tatum shot, you know, 20%. Luka shot 28%. Like, this is what happens in the preseason. I think that is a good encapsulation, the 3-point numbers, of why people say don't worry about the preseason. Because in a small, tiny, little sample size, coming off a 3-month break with guys who are really just there to get in shape, 3-point shooting doesn't matter. But it is something that stood out to me when you're talking about the preseason, that Pat Bev couldn't hit him, Ant couldn't hit him, Cat couldn't hit him. It was virtually just D'Lo and Torian Prince who shot well, so... And Josh Okogie, who I'm sure we will get to, but...
But even despite that 3-point shooting, though, I mean, the Timberwolves took 43% of their shots were threes, which I think is a great number to be at. That's 11th in the league in terms of the preseasons. And in terms of the, you know, percentage of 2-point looks being, you know, I don't know, kind of in that 57 range. I mean, I think that's a good split. And then you look at kind of the percentage of where their points are coming from. Almost 19% of their points in the preseason came on the fast break, which was second in the league by 0.2%. In terms of free throws, 15% came from free throws, which was 12th in the league. And they were number one.
And they would be calling fouls in the preseason, man. Like, not like they do in the regular season. The refs are just getting cardio in as well.
Yeah, and then you look at points off turnovers, 26.5%. That's first in the league by 2%. And then points in the paint, they're second. Almost 50% of their points in the preseason.
That's the big one. Because that's one of my biggest worries with this team, is that they don't have enough guys outside of Cat and Ant who can get into and finish in the paint regularly.
I was just going to say, and I think a big part of that is that you had a lot of active cutters. Mm-hmm. Jaden McDaniels cut a ton in the preseason, which was great. I thought Josh Okogie did a great job of picking his spots and when to cut and when not to cut. And then, too, you have D'Angelo Russell that's trying to get downhill, pull up in the mid-range from right in that lane area, or get all the way to the rim. And then Pat Bev, too. We all know Pat Bev can take guys off the dribble and finish inside. You know, he's a really, really good finisher. For someone his size. And then you have Mr. Turnaround step back. Jalen Noel.
We got 23 minutes in before you brought up Jalen Noel.
I'm surprised it was that long. but yeah, man, I think that this team, I agree with you that was probably a concern coming into the season. But again, it's just another byproduct of really flying up the floor off a live ball rebounds. And it just puts pressure on teams and forces defenses to really have to communicate well. And I think that they'll have a great opportunity to do that in the first few games, because Houston, New Orleans, Denver, all those teams are ginormous teams, you know, and probably won't play as quickly as maybe they did last season. And then you have the Bucks as well, more of a half court team. So it'll just be really interesting whether or not the Wolves can kind of dictate the pace of games early on, and if so, how long they can you know continue to do that into the regular season.
Well, that's how they have to play if they want to be the smallest team in the league. Like, if you are going to give up that size every night, you have to counteract that with speed and with transition opportunities and with getting up the floor off those live ball rebounds and those live ball turnovers. Like, if you can't do that, and you can't rebound, and you can't play inside very often, especially defensively, you're going to lose a lot of games. So I think and that's why I was worried. Like I said, I don't think that the three-point shooting will carry over. We've got massive sample sizes for all of these guys that they can shoot from three. And we've got a sample size of Chris Finch being able to draw up actions that get three-point looks. But that's why that has to be there in the regular season, because you need to be able to play fast and you need to be able to hit shots from deep. Because if you're not big enough, and if you're going to lose the offensive, the second chance points battle every night, which they probably are, you need to win the three-point shooting battle most nights. You definitely need to win the fast break battle, and you need to probably win the points in the paint battle, you know, that aren't coming off second chance points. So that's really important to me, is yeah, shooting and pace and space. It's the kind of, it's a fragile, you know, a stale old saying, but I think it really is important with this team. And then they have to do it defensively. You know, let's take a little break, and then we'll come back and I want to talk about some individuals that I know caught both of our eye.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, we are back. Who do we want to start with first? Because I think there's been a lot of really good and encouraging performers individually throughout the preseason. I know we've already hit on D'Lo and Ant. Let's go Josh Okogie. I know you're a Josh Okogie man. I've been very... I know he only played those first two games, but I've gone from worried about his spot in the rotation to thinking he probably should start on opening night. Or at least him or Vando will start on any given night, because, man, he looks really good. And not talking about the three-point shot. I don't trust that. I will not trust it until I see a big sample size. But defensively, the chaos meshing with control and just becoming overwhelming. You put him next to Pat Beverly and it's like two fucking rabid dogs just nipping at your heels all game. Talk to me about Josh Okogie and what you've seen in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that I saw from Josh is that, you know, when he was kind of that low man that needs to rotate on the backside of the defense, he was awesome. I think it was in, maybe it was in the Denver game, I can't remember, where I think in the, was it whatever game he started? What was the game that he started?
The opener, Pelicans.
Okay, yeah. So in that game, I feel it was like the first 2 minutes, he had like a steal and
first
a block.
First possession, he stuffed Billy Hernangómez at the rim. Summited Mount Hernangómez and destroyed him.
Yeah, just seeing plays like that is awesome. You know, I don't want to bring back Ryan Saunders' effective height stat, but Josh really does play a lot bigger than he is, and he can hold his own. If he sits his ass down in a stance, he's really hard to move. And it's kind of like James Harden, where James Harden is, you know, 6'4", 6'5". He's really strong. And when he gets down in a stance, you saw Giannis in the finals or in the Eastern Conference finals. Giannis couldn't move him. And I think Josh can kind of be the same way in that he can really leap high. He does a good job of being vertical. And he's just a playmaker on defense. And I think in that four spot in the backside, you kind of want that guy to be a playmaker, especially if Cat's going to be up at the level more and the backside is going to be a little bit more exposed cutting from the corners. And the other thing too with that is that you can put Josh at the point of attack and you could put Ant guarding the four. You know, I don't feel as great about Ant on the backside. I feel a lot better about Josh or Jaden there. But that's the nice thing about, you know, Ant's growth as a defensive player, or supposed growth. You know, what we've seen so far is kind of what we can work with. But if Ant's able to guard the ball and you can have Jaden McDaniels and Josh Okogie both playing off the ball, that's a really, really big development for this team, because both of those guys are really, really good playmakers on the back end of the defense. You know, when you look at block percentage, Jaden McDaniels is right up there, I think, in maybe the top three or four or five players that were not centers last year, which is incredible for a rookie. And then with Josh, you know, I don't think Josh necessarily makes as many, you know, stat plays like a block or a steal, but I think there's just a lot of possessions where, you know, you can think about them over the course of a night in any game where, you know, if you're taking notes on the game, you could see a bunch of different notes just saying Okogie just completely trashed up this possession for the other team, even if he doesn't have a steal or a block. And I think that's something that we've seen from Josh that's been encouraging. And then obviously with the three-point shooting, you know, he only played in two of the preseason games and was, I think, what was he, 2 for 4? So not a whole lot there, but... But yeah, man, you know, I think the other advantage of Josh is that he doesn't have to play in the dunker spot. You know, he's got experience playing out to the corner, and that's something that that Jared Vanderbilt doesn't have. And I think that could be a big reason why you see Josh Okogie starting on opening night over Jared Vanderbilt, because even though a lot of these lineups with Vanderbilt had a really high net rating, you know, I still think it's kind of easy to look at those lineups outside of the stats and say, you know, the spacing isn't awesome when you know, Jared's out there. And I think the only time that Jared's really out on the perimeter is when he's handling the ball above the break in a handoff situation. And I just don't think defenses respect that enough to be up on him to a point where he could blow by somebody, if that makes sense, to kind of utilize his athleticism that way.
What Okogie does, even if he can't shoot, is if he can at least put the ball on the deck when you kick it out to him, and he can make plays for others off the dribble. He's really good at those little dump-off passes and hitting cutters as well, and he can kind of get baseline and kick the ball back out to a shooter in the slot or at the top of the key. And that's something that Vando can't do. Obviously, it's a little bit of push-pull with either one, because Vando, you don't get more rebounding, which is important. You're going to get probably more rim protection just in terms of size and being able to deter people from getting into the paint as much as it is actually blocking a shot. He's probably just, players are less likely to drive when Vando's out there just because he's 6 inches taller. Like, but yeah, Okogie gives you more offensively, which is strange to say because he's never given much offensively, but he at least gives you an option as a guy who can, you know, knock down one in every three of his three-pointers, but also take a guy off the dribble and punish a closeout. How hard are those closeouts going to come? I'm not sure, but they will come in some form, and he can at least do something with the ball. I'm really excited. I know we're talking about individuals, but just on what you were saying, I'm really excited at the amount of players that they have who can both guard point of attack and be the low, one of the two low men, or the guy at the nail and the low man. I'm irrationally excited about this defensive scheme, man. I don't, not to the point where I think they're going to be good defensively, but I just think their personnel actually really fits it. Like, if Anthony Edwards is anything, you know, like he looks on ball, that's great. But you still have Jaden who can play on the ball. J.O. can play on the ball. Pat Beverly can definitely play on the ball. And then you have those three guys and Taurean Prince who can do both. Like, all four, Okogie, McDaniels, Beverly, and Prince can play on or on the ball or as one of those weak side helpers. And that means that at any time, you probably have two of the four main pick and roll defenders are going to be really good at their job. And that's not including whatever Kat does or whatever Anthony Edwards does. Like, that's manageable. I think that's really manageable. And there's going to be times where you have all four who are really good at it. And if you have Jaden and Pat Bev or Jaden and J.O. or Jaden and Taurean Prince or any combination of those four as the two low men, man, like, you're going to do well in the pick and roll. You're going to have to force teams to beat you in other ways. And they probably will a lot of the time. Like, they will beat you in transition. Minnesota's still not very good in, you know, still probably won't be very good in transition defense. But I just feel like the pick and roll defense can really be solid. And that kind of relates back to Josh Okogie, because I think he's a really crucial piece in that. Is there anyone who excited you individually?
Yeah, I was just going to jump in and say, you know, one other thing kind of going off of the defensive scheme is that, you know, I tweeted that it's a legitimate luxury that the Timberwolves can play three of Beverly, McDaniels, Vanderbilt, Okogie, and Ant.
Right, I didn't even mention Vando in any of that. That's another guy who's in there as well.
Three legitimate playmakers on the defensive end without tanking your offense on any given time. And
question. Sorry to cut you off, but like, is there a chance that at any, you know, at 95% of the minutes in a game, Minnesota are going to have three or more plus defenders on the court at all times? Like, is that a possibility?
I don't think it'll be at all times, because I think we'll see some more offensive lineups where you have the, you know, you have the Ant, or excuse me, you have the D'Lo Ant, Beasley, you know, whoever, and then Cat lineup.
I guess that Cat and Ant would have to be plus defenders for that to be a thing.
Yeah, and I think too, then if you have a lineup out there that's like Bev, Bees, you know, Prince, Vanderbilt, and Nas, I think it's kind of dicey. And I think we've seen a lot of really strong evidence in favor of the argument that you should have one of the big three on the floor at all times. That lineup that had Beverly and Beasley as the, you know, as the two guards just did not do well in terms of being able to create offense and get into sets and run things the way that you want to run them. Plus, too, you just need to be able to put a bunch of pressure on the defense. And even if it's just one guy that can do a majority of the heavy lifting there, you know, I think that that's going to be huge. But yeah, I mean, one other player that has really stood out to me is a guy who, you know, I think is creating a lot more questions, is Noel. You know, obviously Beasley hasn't looked like he's in the best shape. I know that Finch mentioned at practice last week that Beasley took some time off towards the end of the summer. And honestly, I can understand that. You know, he spent a bulk of the offseason in prison, serving out his sentence from, you know, from the gun charge that he had last year. And, you know, honestly, you know, I'm sure that he was, you know, prison yard Malik just, you know, getting workouts in like a madman because he just works his ass off. And I think it was Dane who said that, you know, obviously Malik's biggest, you know, attribute that helped his game last year was how well he was in shape. He was probably in the best shape of any Timberwolf last season, so I don't really doubt that he'll get into game shape. I don't think it's going to be a Wancho situation where, you know, everybody just makes excuses for him left and right for, you know, the first 60 games of the year before people actually realize, hey, maybe this guy isn't an NBA caliber player. But, you know, with Bees, you know, he played much better in that last preseason game. But I think with the way that Noel has been able to create at the end of these games, you know, albeit against second and third string guys, but he has the confidence and the tools to be able to be a really effective scorer in the NBA. And I think we've seen the flashes, and the numbers maybe haven't been there as, you know, as much as we'd like them to be. But I also think a lot of his numbers last year were skewed by injury. You know, I think he ended up shooting like 32 or 33% last year or something like that from three. But if you take out the last, you know, few games that he was playing hurt and then the games he was actually injured for, he shot more like 38 or 39%, which I think is a more accurate number based on, you know, the huge volume that we saw in college with him. And I've walked away from this preseason asking, you know, how big of a drop off is there between Malik Beasley and Jalen Noel?
And how do you answer get him on the floor,
is the, I, you could play him in the same role as Beasley almost, or you could play him more at the one. You know, if there's going to be situations where Pat Bev is going to miss some games, you know, D'Lo is obviously inevitably going to miss some games. But two, if you put Jalen Noel out there, you know, beside D'Angelo Russell, I think that would be a really interesting thing to do for stretches of games if you need offense and Malik Beasley just doesn't have it. I love Malik on the floor, on the offensive side. I think he's really made an effort to improve his playmaking, which I've noticed has been huge. But, you know, Noel, I think that you could make an argument that Noel is so much better defensively than Beasley is, that the drop-off, you know, from Beasley to Noel on the offensive side is almost somewhat offset by how much better Noel is defensively than Beasley. You know, I'm not saying that Noel should be playing over Malik Beasley, but I'm just saying that, you know, maybe if you think that drop-off isn't as big, maybe you try and focus pushing your chips in the middle on a Ben Simmons trade around, you know, a package that can include someone like Malik Beasley. If you have someone kind of waiting in the wings that you think can be an ample replacement and play up to that level. But, you know, in your mind, kind of, you know, how big of a drop off do you think there is? And you know, what do you think it would take for Noel really to get consistent minutes in the rotation?
Oh, I'm so torn on Noel. To answer the first part, I think the drop-off the comparison to me comes that because Noel, you can run your offense through. And I say that in terms of you can give him the ball and let him go to work. You're not going to run a really good offense with Noel as your number one option. But like Beasley, I don't want that. I don't want bench lineups with Beasley having to be the shot creator. It's not something that he does well, and he forces it when he has to do it. Noel is a shot creator. He said it himself before that he's not a spot-up shooter. That's not really his role, and it never has been his role. When you watch him, he's clearly a guy who wants to have the ball in his hand and who can make shots in the mid-range, who can get open looks from three, who can get to the rim. Beasley's not that. Beasley is a gunner, no pun intended. But he is a shooter. I think that you can play lineups with both of them. I think it's tough because he's not a point guard, Noel. You look at that game against Brooklyn, and I was watching him pretty specifically, and I reckon he missed 4 or 5 reads that were really pretty basic point guard reads that would have led to buckets. And that's fine because he's not a point guard, and he's a scorer. But, like, you have to do something. You have to play someone a little funky or a little out of position if you want to get both of those guys minutes, because to me they're pretty much facsimiles of each other in terms of role, not really in terms of game style, but in terms of role. 6'4" shooting guard going to take up a fairly large chunk of usage. I think you could get away with playing both of them together with maybe like you know, Jaden, Vando, and Nas. I think, like, but is Finch going to do that? Because I think Finch likes McLaughlin more than Noel. I think Noel is 12th in the pecking order right now. And to me, that means two injuries to guards or one injury to a wing.
Who do you have 11th?
McLaughlin. I think that in Chris Finch's mind, I think definitely McLaughlin is the 11th guy. You look at those first two preseason games, I know that the preseason rotations are really wonky, but McLaughlin was pretty much in the rotation. Like, it was like 11 guys were playing the first half and then Noel was coming in late.
Because that was going to be my question, is that, you know, if McLaughlin is going to be playing, you know, point guard 3 minutes, where, you know, he might play 8-10 minutes a game, because you want to have stretches where Pat Bev can play out there with D'Lo, or at least,
and you don't
want to
overplay Pat Bev
guard.
Either.
Yeah, I think that you could make an argument that having Noel playing instead of McLaughlin in certain contexts would make more sense. And I think that that's the way that he gets onto the floor, because I think Noel is at his best when he has the ball in his hands and he can, you know, get ball screens and score out of ball screen actions, not necessarily playmake out of ball screen actions. Because if he were to play the point guard, he would absolutely be a scoring point guard as opposed to, you know, a playmaking guard. And the other thing with that too is that, you know, I think there's certain situations where, you know, it might just help to have a guy out there that's 6'4" as opposed to a guy that's 5'11" or 6 foot. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if Finch kind of takes that situational approach to the starting lineup and applies that to the way that he wants to utilize the end of his bench.
Because I think he will.
I think you could make an argument that you could give Ant point guard minutes if you wanted, you know, if you're playing a bigger team and wanted to play somebody like Jake Lehman even for stretches of time, which I think would be fine. Because if there's any guy on the end of the bench that I trust to come in and just, you know, bust his ass for 2-3 minutes cold off the bench, be Jake Lehman. I mean, we saw that a lot last year, albeit in garbage time. But, I mean, all those guys that are at the end of the bench playing in garbage time, you know, are fighting for minutes. We saw it with Jaden McDaniels last year. He was awesome in garbage time at the start of the year, and that was the way that he worked into the rotation. So I think that that's one of the bigger questions that I have. I mean, not just Noel, but just the end of the bench and kind of how that 10, 11, 12 guy thing gets worked out, because I think the Timberwolves are going to have a 10 or 11 man rotation.
And that I think they are as well, but and part of me leans to, just as much as I want both of those guys to get minutes, McLaughlin and Noel, I think part of me as well just leans to, like, play Ant in their minutes that you want to play Pat Bev and D'Lo. Play Ant as the backup point guard and just play 10 men, because I just feel like I've never been a fan of big rotations. I think it sometimes can get a little bit messy when there's too many guys in and out.
Totally agree.
But the reason they want to do it is because McLaughlin and Noel are both NBA players, man. Like, I don't know if Nathan Knight's an NBA player. I don't know if Jake Lehman should be in an NBA rotation consistently, but I'm pretty sure that Noel and McLaughlin could go to 15 other teams and get 15 minutes a night. And I'm sure that Chris Finch sees that as well. And like you said, I think it has to be situational, because if there's times where your bench can't get it going and you can't play 3 or 4 bench guys at the same time and score enough, which I think is a possibility, because the Timberwolves bench is kind of geared towards chaos and defense and running in transition, but not really half-court offense. I don't know if I want McLaughlin out there being the at the helm of that. I'm pretty sure I would like Noel out there, like, just for a 5-minute stretch, and just say, look, like, go and get a bucket, go and get 2, 3, 4 buckets, because Vando and Pat Bev and Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid, they're gonna hold it down at least semi decently defensively, but we don't know if any of these guys can go get a bucket. We know that Naz probably can. You and Nas run pick and roll for 3 minutes, you know, shoot a couple mid-range jumpers, get into a rhythm. And if you're not, like, if you don't get into that rhythm, you know, you're probably going to come out quick and we'll just have to play Anthony Edwards 3 more minutes in this game. But maybe Noel gets you through 5-minute stretches in 30 games for the season. And yeah, that's probably a win.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the way that the Timberwolves can utilize the depth that they have, because I, like you said Noel and McLaughlin are NBA players that can be in an NBA rotation. Like, I was texting some people about this over the course of the last week that, you know, we really haven't had that as Wolves fans, looking at a rotation that's legitimately, you could have any of 12 guys in rotation on a consistent basis and still win a good amount of games. It's just a matter of, can they use that depth to kind of junk up 2, 3, 4 minutes here and there and be willing to do that and trust guys to do that cold off the bench, especially if, you know, it comes at a somewhat critical juncture. I think a lot of times games can be decided in the kind of 4 to 5 minute stretch from maybe 2 minutes left in the third quarter to maybe the 9 minute mark of the fourth quarter, when starters generally kind of start to trickle back in on the floor. You see a lot of teams during that time kind of try and junk up the game if they're behind, or throw a different look at a defense if they need a spark, or throw a different defense if an offense is kind of cooking. And I think the Timberwolves have the tools to be able to do some stuff like that. And I think that, you know, hearing Finch speak about his thought process about that, if we see the Timberwolves in some of those situations early in the season, will be really telling. And then too, I mean, you also think about, would it be better to try and consolidate as much of that depth as you can into a Ben Simmons trade? Because the Timberwolves are still pretty uniquely positioned to put together a somewhat decent offer and make it work financially, especially in a three-team deal if you want to get another asset. But hey, I mean, I want to see this team roll how it is right now. And
I'm pretty over the Ben Simmons stuff, man. Like, I hope that he ends up on the Timberwolves somewhat. I've been put off a little bit with some of the theatrics that he's been throwing out there recently, and the diva kind of attitude that he's had towards Philly. But I definitely would still be excited if he ended up on the Timberwolves roster. But I'm so fucking sick of it, man. Like, I just want to see this team play.
I'm really excited to see this team play, because I think it's a really interesting experiment that they have at their hands, and it's going to be really interesting to see just how individual players are going to be able to grow, because that'll determine ultimately, you know, how far this team is really able to go.
I mean, they're not getting Malik Beasley, and they're not getting Ben Simmons if Malik Beasley and Jade McDaniels hit 4 3-pointers for the season, like they look like they're gonna at the moment.
Hey, Jaden shot the hell out of the ball in that last preseason game out of the corners.
Yeah. That'll be all right. Jaden's looked bad, man, offensively. But again, like, I just don't know what I can read into preseason, especially for sophomores.
Hey, we all
watched
Summer League, okay? I think he's going to be just fine, all right? Yeah, I mean, I wonder too. I mean, I don't know if it's a coincidence if those are the two guys that are being talked about the most in trades, if that's affecting them at all. You know, we haven't really heard any leaks on the Timberwolves players that have been involved in those talks. But I mean, obviously, if you're those two guys, you probably understand the business aspect of it. So I wonder, you know, if the noises and the rumblings kind of get quieter, you know, within the Wolves, I wouldn't be surprised to see them play a little bit better. And also too, I mean, those guys' roles are going to be different over the course of an entire season when you work back that full big three, because Malik Beasley has played one game with the full big three, or 1.5, which were those first, you know, before Cat got hurt by, or Rudy Gobert injured Cat on that dirty ass play in Utah. But yeah, man, I Malik is going to be really interesting, because if Malik is able to play like he did, you know, when Cat was out, and really still shoot the ball well and be able to provide really consistent, solid ancillary scoring, I just don't know how you can keep the Timberwolves down offensively enough to a point where your offense is going to be able to outscore them when they get going. And I think they just have enough pieces, and they have a really smart coach to at least help one guy get going. and you can run your offense through any of those top three guys. And I think it's just going to be really interesting to see how that pecking order plays out and where Beasley falls in it, especially because he was really high in it last year out of necessity. And now that there may not be that necessity, I think it'll be really interesting to see how some of those role players respond and kind of getting back to, you know, the initial thing that we were talking about. If the back end of the bench kind of starts to, you know, creep up towards the middle of the bench, you know, based on how some of those, you know, ancillary guys play early on in the season.
I want them. I want them to have pressure. I want Beasley to have pressure from Noel. I want, you know, Pat Bev to have to feel like if he doesn't do all those leadership and defensive things that we know he can, that Jordan McLaughlin might start eating into his minutes a little bit. Like, I want D'Lo to feel like that as well, that Pat Bev might start eating into his minutes if he doesn't try on defense. I think that's a good thing. The polarizing thing for me with going back to Beasley is that I think offensively he's a lot better when he plays with the starters, and I don't think he should be a starter, if that makes sense. I think that he is a better player when he's a better, he forces more shots when he's the number one option in a bench unit. I want him to be a fourth option that is used as like a release valve shooter, a transition runner, a guy who can just go and get himself open and other guys can make plays for him. When he starts making plays, things aren't good.
I think we're going to see D'Lo and or Ant play a significant amount of minutes with Beasley.
Yeah, I think it should be D'Lo especially, because him and D'Lo play really well together, and they've already got those. I know Ant was there as well, but like Ant was kind of off the bench and stuff, but D'Lo had those, whatever it was, 30 games together last season at the start.
But just somebody that can have the ball in their hands, that can kick out and create shots for him, or somebody that he can play off, a dynamic player that he can play off of, I think
would be huge. And Ant can collapse the defense as well, which D'Lo doesn't do as much. So, and Ant has always been a good kick-out passer. I think he's had that in his bag since day one, and he's only got better at it.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that I think Kat has really made a point of trying to attack defenses in specific ways so that the backside of the defense collapses and he can kick out to shooters either in the slot or in the backside corner. And in this last preseason game, I think Torian Prince, I want to say, shot 7 threes, and I think Kat created either 4 or 5 of them. And I think, too, he could do the same thing with Malik Beasley. I think Kat could walk into a possession knowing, like, okay, if I get a seam to drive here, I'm going to drive. I know how the defense is going to react to me, and I have a feeling that whoever's back there is going to be open, whether that's Beasley or Prince or whomever. So, just any of the starters, whatever kind of, you know, mixed bag that you have between starters and bench guys, there's got to be one of those three that are playing out there with Beasley, I think, at any given moment. Because
no all bench lineups. I don't want to see it for one fucking second.
No, I mean, we saw it in the preseason. It really struggled to generate points. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of created that adversity that the starters needed, that kind of kick in the ass, so they couldn't play slow in that third quarter or early in that fourth quarter when they'd come back in. I think we're going to see a lot more mixing and a lot less platoon swapping, especially with Beasley. But what'd you think of Bolmaro? I know that that you are a resident Bolmaro whisperer, and I'm just curious kind of what you saw from him, what you liked, and what you think the plan for him should be, over the next few months.
I had a line in my last player ratings on housandgrouse.substack.com, shameless plug, that I feel like kind of sums up the whole Bolmaro experience for me so far in the preseason, and is that he's like a deer in the headlights that then jumps through your fucking windshield and kicks you in the face. Like, he looks scared and nervous and doesn't know what to do, and then all of a sudden he throws like a live dribble touch pass around the back dime, or he, you know, gets to the ring and hits a layup in clutch time. This is what he's always done. This is what he did in Spain as well, where he looks young and he looks inexperienced and he looks not strong enough to be out there. And then he just decides that, like, he's going to blow your mind for a second. And that's what I've seen through the preseason. I think he's looked a little bit more comfortable on the ball than I thought maybe he would. I've long
defensively
said...
Defensively or offensively?
Offensively. Defensively, he's good, man. I don't even need to dive, you know, to kind of cement my stance too much, because like he will be good as an on-ball defender. And I will stick by that until he's not in the league anymore, because he's really, really good as a point of attack guy, or just as a, yeah, mainly on ball. He's been beaten backdoor a few times, which happened in Spain. It happened in the Olympics. It's his biggest problem defensively is that he shades too far towards the ball because he's really ball focused. But offensively, I've been kind of maybe on the wrong side of consensus on this, that I think he's a point guard. I don't think he's a big wing. I don't think that he... I think he's at his best when he has the ball in his hands.
He's playmaking for others.
Yeah, when he's playmaking for... I know that he can do that as kind of a second side pick and roll guy, but he doesn't... I don't trust his shot yet, and when you can't shoot and no one respects your shot, it makes secondary playmaking a lot harder than it can be if you're just a guy who has the ball in his hands. And he's always been a point guard, even in Spain when... He was playing backup minutes to guys who had been in the NBA, and he was, you know, in a league that's smaller in size and less athletic than the NBA, where maybe it would make more sense to play him as a two or a three. He still played the one all the time. And that takes time. Young point guards take time is kind of what I'm getting at there, is if you believe him to be a point guard like I do, then he's going to take a little bit longer to develop than if he was just an off-ball wing or a secondary playmaking wing. So I've been impressed with some things that he did, and also not very surprised that he looks like he needs some time. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I think I texted you a question just in all the game, in all the film that you watched of Bulmero. Because you had access to way more of it than I did. Just if you notice that his shot looked a lot more fluid off the dribble than it did spotting up, because that was something that has stood out to me, even in really small sample size of preseason games. He just looks so much more confident when he's got the ball in his hands.
And that goes into what I was saying, that I just think that he needs the ball to be doing. And that's a problem, because you can't give him the ball. Like, you can't play him 20 minutes a night and give him the ball. Like, that's why he won't even be in the rotation, because he needs time to be good enough to have the on-ball equity that he probably needs to be his best self.
Right. And the thing that I noticed was that he wasn't super active when he didn't have the ball in his hands. You know, he's constantly kind of moving around and kind of has that positive kinetic energy, because that's kind of how it is in Europe. You can't just stand in one spot. You constantly have to keep moving, because all of the actions over there are so detailed, and there's so many intricacies of it that they require you to move and cut and this and that. That you can tell that in more of a, you know, isolation heavy pick and roll, other three guys aren't moving as much type of offense that we have in the NBA, that he just isn't used to that yet. And I think that with Bulmero, you know, I tend to agree more with you that he's a point guard, or at least that all of his best skills are generally the best, a point guard's best skills, if that makes sense, in terms of his vision and his passing accuracy and the way that he's able to pass guys open. I don't know that secondary wing creators are successful if that's what their skill set is necessarily. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really tough, because you're in this place with Bulmero where you really want him to be around NBA caliber players in practice to be able to learn from them. But you really also want him to have a ton of reps. And obviously practice isn't a game. And he's kind of one of those in-between players where I feel like if he went to the G League, his playmaking and defense would just be so advanced to the point where you're not going to regress. But like, you're maybe not getting quite as much out of it. And I think the aspect that I think would be interesting for him to go to the G League in is to really work on, you know, spot-up shooting if he's playing alongside an Isaiah Miller or McKinley Wright, two guys that can collapse the defense and can kind of help him work on that spot up shooting game or cutting off the ball in more of a read and react system. So it's just kind of this pros and cons, and you got to weigh it. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Wolves do, because I don't think it's going to be a Jaden McDaniels situation where we anticipate him being in Iowa for the full season or being a go-to guy in Iowa and then just being a garbage time hero and working his way into the rotation.
He's too Jaden far McDaniels behind.
Jaden McDaniels was so uniquely and rarely skilled for a guy where he was drafted, where it made sense kind of when it happened. But yeah, Bolmaro is going to be just an interesting case in terms of the Wolves kind of giving us some insight into where their heads are at based on how we proceed over the next, two, three weeks. Because do you know when the G League season starts?
No idea. I'll be honest with you. He should have stayed in Spain. He should have done one more year in Spain, I think. Because that would have given him what he needed. I know that he needed to, and I'm sure he wanted to, get over here and get up to speed with really super high-level NBA athletes, which he will still get in the G League.
Starts November 5th, by the way.
Oh, yeah. So about, 3 weeks? But I just think that he would have got more minutes against better players, like better actual basketball players in Spain, I think. Like, I don't know if that's me being an international homer, but I think the Spanish league's better than the G League. I don't think it's as athletic, which maybe he needs to learn to play against guys who can... I think that's why he gets caught overshading and gets done backdoor so much, because he could get away with that against a slower 6'3" white dude. You know what I mean? Like, now it's the most athletic.
And they pack the hell out of the paint too.
Yeah. And there's no spacing, man. Like, they don't shoot like they do in the States. So, like, now he's playing against athletic guys who, if you shade backdoor, and if you shade up top too far, if you want to top lock guys, like, you're going to get backdoored to death. And he got backdoored against Brooklyn 3 times, I think, in about 6 minutes. And, like, that's not going to work. And maybe that's why he needs G League. But, yeah, I think it's a really good point that you make, that playing with Miller, playing with McKinley Wright will force him to be a little bit of both, because maybe the option here is that he is a point guard, but we need to kind of turn him into a combo guard. We need to get him better at shooting and better at moving off the ball, because that's his best path to NBA minutes.
I was just going to say, and even if he isn't, a great spot-up shooter, I still think there's a lot of value that the Wolves could get out of him as a guy that just is really heady off the ball, because his vision and awareness on the floor is awesome. And yeah, I think he can see things develop before, even guys who are in NBA rotations can. And when you have that, you can kind of, show a guy the speed of the game and how he can cut and impact the game that way too. Really strong playmaking, movement off the ball, and really high level defense, I think, is a good foundational skill set of a player that can be useful for a long time, even if you aren't, the best shooter. I still think Bolmaro can be a guy that, can shoot 33% from three, like, enough to a point where...
Yeah, I don't think it's completely broken.
I don't think it is either. Like, I don't think it's a Jarrett Culver situation. I think it's probably maybe a little bit better than a Josh Okogie situation right now, where, and the situation with Josh is, like, yes, objectively he's a poor three-point shooter based on his averages, but based on his form, the way he shoots it, it doesn't look broken, and defenses still in some aspects respect that shot and enough to a point where he can attack closeouts. And I think Bolmaro could be a guy that, if he gets to a point where he can attack closeouts, it's curtains for defenses, because he's gonna pass somebody open, or if there's even the slightest of a window that he can fit the ball through, he's gonna try and do it. And more often than not, he's probably gonna be successful, because he's so fun to watch when he's got the ball in his hands. He's so crafty and creative. So, would you send him to the G League if you were the Wolves?
Yeah, I'd send him. I think it's a perfect conundrum that you brought up before, that you want him practicing with all the best players all the time versus getting him reps all the time, and I lean towards reps, I think. That just get him reps and figure them, and if he goes to the G League and he seems like he's got enough reps where you're comfortable with it, then you can move him up and hope that he kind of progresses from there. But I think first and foremost, he needs consistent reps in whatever role you plan on him being in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, and the other, I mean, really the last question too that I have is, how much of a factor do you think Prigioni will be in whether or not he stays or goes? Because every time we see Bolmiro in practice, we see clips of him or before or after games, he's always with Prigioni. And like, if he went to Iowa, he wouldn't have that. And I don't know if they have the infrastructure in place down there with someone who speaks Spanish. I mean, obviously they could hire someone and get someone down there, but like, I think that's an interesting element of the whole thing as well.
That's a really good point. That's something I hadn't thought of at all, and probably something that's really important. I don't think you want to just completely lob him into the deep end of American culture and kind of just say, like, look, we do have this guy that can help you through it and that can speak your language, but like, now you're not allowed to see him, or not allowed to see him, but you know, now you're not going to work with him every day. You're going to work with all these guys who you can't really understand, and he speaks really good English for someone who's been speaking English for 1 year. It blows my mind when anyone can speak a second language, but like, this is jargon, you know, like, this is basketball jargon. It's you know, play calls, quick, like, yelling at you, you know. You need to really understand. And Prigioni can at least translate some of that for him. And so could Rosas, but now he's not there.
I was just going to say, so when I was at the introductory press conference in person, you know, a month ago, whatever that was, is you could tell that reporters were trying very hard to dumb down the language as much as they could, or use very basic language, ask direct questions that were short and to the point. And Bolmiro was pretty honest if he needed help from Rosas, and Rosas would translate it for him. But you could tell he really tried and really like felt confident, and but he also knew where he was at. And I think that that's important too, is that, you know, you don't want to get your, you know, shoulders out in front of your skis where, you know, you think you can do something and then you're like, oh, wait, shit, I cannot do that. You know, it's kind of like,
and that's one way to really, derail like your experience immediately, is just to feel so lost in a foreign country. And that's what and another thing that maybe will play into it is that the team looked like they fucking love him, man.
I know, that was awesome.
Like,
I love that.
He is like the little brother on the team. And maybe they think for now, you've got Prigioni, you've got this bunch of big brothers who are really willing to help you and kind of support you along the way. Maybe, especially if it's a normal G League season, which I think it is, that's just, you know, you can kind of oscillate between the G League and the main team as much as a team wants to do it, or whatever the rules were pre-pandemic. Yeah, maybe you just say, look, for 2 to 3 months, like I'd say until January, you might not play many minutes, but you're going to practice with a big team. You're going to get 3 more months to learn English and to get ingratiated in the American culture. And then you're going to go down to the G League, and we expect you to be more in tune with what we want to see from you. We expect you to be able to communicate better with your peers, and we expect you to play really well and kind of vault yourself into a second season that maybe you can start getting actual NBA minutes in.
Yeah, so I'm reading this right now. So there's an expanded Showcase Cup to start the season. So it's a 14-game tournament starting on November 5th with all teams in the G League. So the teams will be split into 4 regional groups and play 12 intra-group games in their home markets. The top 4 teams with the winning percentages from each group, along with the next best 4 teams, so 8 total teams, will advance to single elimination tournament to determine the winner of the Showcase Cup. The champions will receive a trophy and monetary prize to be split among the players. Following the Showcase Cup, team records will be reset, and the 36-game regular season will tip off Monday, December 27th.
Perfect. Maybe
so
you
you're
send
getting
him,
more
send
games.
Send him there for that. Send him there after the cup for the regular season, and give him to December to ingratiate himself with the actual team and then kind of and then trickle him down to the G League. That's what I would do.
Yeah, or something like that where he can at least practice and kind of feel much better. Because I agree now that we've kind of talked through it that I think sending him down to Iowa right away would be tough just from like a culture shock, lifestyle perspective, you know?
It's just a huge culture shock to do that to someone, you know, that clearly is already experiencing a little bit of culture shock, I think.
And
that works well. That works well that you kind of, you don't miss season. You don't have to throw him into a team that's kind of halfway through a season. Like, let them play the cup. McKinley Wright gets MVP, scores 35 in the final game. and then send Bolmaro down to take the mantle off him after that.
Yeah, man. He's just an interesting case that I think the way that his situation gets handled this year will be just kind of an interesting, you know, background storyline to follow if things go south with the actual Wolves. he's just a guy that, you know, if he becomes a fully optimized version of what people think he can be a really, really impactful player moving forward on a rookie contract, which is great. And, you know, I agree with you that maybe one more year in Europe would have made sense. But if he also like really plays well in this kind of new system, getting acclimated to it, and he's ready to play next year right away and be in the rotation, I think that would be pretty massive. Well,
I think it's definitely a person specific thing to whether staying in Europe or getting a year in the system, even if you don't play. Kind of which one works better. So I think that he obviously chose to come to the NBA as well. It wasn't just the team saying, look, we want you now. Like he had a contract signed that he would have to agree to break with Barcelona. So if he was happy to do it, I think that's probably the first step in it succeeding. I've kept you for a while, but before we get out of here, just quickly, Karl Anthony Towns is going to have a very good season. That's all I have to say about that. We all know who Kat is. We all know that, you know, the discussion around Kat for the entire offseason. He's going to average 28, 12, and 8. And no one in the world... Like, he's going to be cooler than you and shoot a basketball better than you and score the ball better than everyone. And we just have to accept it. Because I genuinely think he's going to have an awesome season. He looks so good right now.
I think he's going to have an awesome season in large part because I wasn't really anticipating Kat slimming down the way that he did.
I thought he'd try and bulk up. Like, I know he's muscled up, but I thought he would even try maybe... I didn't think he was whatever he said he was, 270 or something. Like, I thought he'd try and get bigger, but he looks better slim.
Yeah,
especially in the system they're playing.
Because the floor is so spread out that... And, I mean, he's got such a quick release shooting the ball that, you know, all these big guys are going to step out to him. And if they're going to step out to him, I think he's going to shoot way less threes and just be pumping and going and, you know, attacking the basket, which is great because I think he gets to the foul line a lot more. And I think he'd, you know, create a lot of really easy opportunities for himself. And I think we saw that really. He really tried to attack Zubac, which I thought was great in that Clippers game. But then at the same time, too, the one thing that I will say that worries me is that if he's pumping and going more and driving to the basket, I don't know that Kat knows how to fall correctly.
He definitely doesn't, and
that worries me a little bit. But to be positive, I think too that if when he pumps and goes, he like I had said earlier with all these different passing angles that he's showcased, that I think if he's able to do that consistently and get guys a bunch of open shots, that'll be huge. Like, I would be totally cool if Kat averaged like 23, 12, and 7 as opposed to like 27, 12, and 3 or 4.
Yeah, you know for what I sure. Mean?
Like, if he can help
he
get other
get,
guys
if he
going,
doesn't get like 10 triple doubles this season, it's because of his teammates. It's because the guy's not hitting shot. Because he's passing, it's always been above average for a big man. The last two seasons, or the last season and the preseason, it has gone to another level. It's right, in my opinion, it's right underneath, like not right underneath, but it's underneath Jokic only for bigs. Like some of the passes he threw in that Brooklyn game, I don't think any of them ended up as assists. He threw one where he drove baseline and whipped it to the slot underneath the
his like right kind arm.
Of up and up. Yeah, like that is bonkers, man. He looks more under control with the passes. He looked in general preseason, you know, caveat that it's four games or whatever, but he looks like everything is slower for him, and everything already seemed easy for him, but everything just seems like it's just like simple. He knows what he can do. He knows when he can get it. His jump hook looks back. He's jump hooking with his left hand now, which we didn't see for so long last season after he hurt his wrist. Like, I don't know if he shot a left hand jump hook all fucking season. Like, everything looks to be falling into place offensively, and he's been really solid defensively. I haven't had any issues with him defensively either.
And that's the other thing too, is that, you know, I think Cat is a much better defender when he's deterring passes as opposed to deterring shots. And I think in that Brooklyn game, especially in that third quarter when the Wolves really started to kind of get on that run, I think a lot of it had to do with him kind of setting the tone on defense and getting in passing lanes and deflecting a lot of passes. I think he had three steals in the game maybe, and I think two of them came in that third quarter where you know, guys were trying to fit passes in when they drove on him, and he made it really, really tough. And then if they did try and shoot over him, he was straight up. And I think if he can do more of that, you know, I think that the Wolves defense, then you legit start looking at the team being in that, you know, 13 to 17 range as opposed to the 17 to 23 range, if that makes sense. Yeah. If he's anything above average defensively, I think the floor of this team rises considerably. You know,
and that's the same with Ant as well. If those two take leaps, like this team's good. And I think if you're listening to this, you've probably seen Dane Moore had that breakdown on Twitter about the defense the other day. That's something I think that you should like that it needs to be hammered home with Cat. That there's times in this defense where, like, he's going to be exposed by rim runners. That's kind of how the defense works, that if everyone's not on the same page, rim runners and corner shooters are going to be the guys who profit off it the most. And I think that more than ever, that is less of Cat's fault than it has been in the drops game.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's up with the ball. He needs to be able to show and recover. The role man's not no longer his duty to dispense of, but there's times where, especially great passes, Luka, Harden, you know, Trey, LeBron, those guys can absolutely pick apart hedging schemes or, you know, the big upper the level. That's just how it works. That is the risk you take, and you can stop that. There's things you can do to kind of negate those great passes, but guys who can hit passes through those little tiny gaps between Cat and D'Lo, and or also skip pass to the corner when the low man has come to help on the roller. Like, they're going to score from that. That's just how it works, and that's something that Chris Finch knows, and that's something that just is going to happen. But I think Cat has less responsibility this season, and that's just a really good thing, because the more responsibility you give him on defense, the more he tries to do, the worse he gets. I don't think, and giving him less responsibility isn't saying like, oh, we can't blame Cat anymore if something goes wrong. If something goes wrong and it's Cat's fault, like, we can talk about it. But now it's not just like, oh, that's all right, Jeff Teague couldn't guard the pick and roll. Now it's like, it's all right, Cat will save us. Like, Cat can't save you, but Cat can be a part of a group that does okay.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I tweeted out during the game that I think especially the bench will get killed by rim running secondary bigs.
So Nas doesn't look very good in the new team. He looks like he really needs a bit of time to get used to it.
But he also admitted that he has always played drop. Like, his whole life he's played drop. So I think that's, you know, understandable that he'll take some time with that. And I think you'll see Jared Vanderbilt play more with Nas as a result of that, just because Vanderbilt can just kind of make shit happen out of nowhere on the defensive end. But also, you know, I had a back and forth with Dane on this a little bit on Twitter, where, you know, I think there will be a couple of games where the Wolves just get assaulted from the corner and they lose by 20 points because teams are just, you know, making corner three after corner three after corner three. But in the aggregate, you know, the Timberwolves laid out a red carpet to get into the lane when they played drop coverage and it wasn't great. And I would much rather take a game or two against like the Clippers or the Hawks or, you know, the Nets or the Warriors or whomever it is that just peppers you and kills you from the corners. Because I think overall you're going to come out ahead when comparing the two defenses against each other, because in this hedging scheme or the at the level scheme, I think that you're going to see much, much less, you know, just getting completely killed from a game-to-game basis. And I think that the Timberwolves have the personnel, to be a more at-the-level team and a switch-heavy team. And again, I think that, you know, we've heard Alston Turner, the Wolves' new defensive coordinator, say that you've got to be able to play to scheme or to play scheme to the personnel that you have. And if you're constantly trying to force personnel that doesn't fit one scheme into playing that scheme, you're going to have problems. And I think that just on the basis alone that this team, as it is constructed, better fits an at-the-level scheme, I think that the Timberwolves defense will be better because of that. But also, too, like, you'd rather have a shot that's being taken from 23 feet away than a shot that is right at the rim.
Right, that,
and,
yeah.
And that's hopefully it keeps Cat out of foul trouble too, so that even if teams aren't making a bunch of corner threes, you're still giving yourself a chance because Cat's still in the game.
Yeah. The previous scheme wanted to give the other team shots that we didn't want to take, which is pretty much just saying, like, give them mid-range shots. But the problem is that they couldn't defend it well enough to stop those mid-range shots from becoming 10 feet closer to the hoop. Like, now it's like, we're just going to stop you from scoring at the rim. And we're going to scramble to stop you from hitting threes. And you're probably going to hit some, especially in the corners, because maybe that scramble is not going to be fast enough, or your pass is going to be too good, and your offense is going to be too well executed to stop us. But whatever you do, we're not going to let you have points in the paint. We're not going to give you a runway, like you said, to get points in the paint. And that is more important. That's why it's a better scheme, because you can do that stuff with Joel Embiid. You can do it with Rudy Gobert, because, like, if you get that, if you get downhill, if you beat that point of attack defender in a drop scheme, you've got a massive human being that you have to go around to score.
It's a 2-on-1. It became a 2-on-1 situation almost every single time.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way with Cat. He's just not Gobert or Embiid. Like, he's a guy. The thing he has over both of those guys is he can get up and move his feet, and he's athletic. He's not stuck to the ground, huge, wide, big man. So I can't believe it took this long. I'm still, you know, as much Kool-Aid as we're drinking. Like, yeah, it could still be 20th overall, but it's different.
I could see a world in which it's 24th or 25th, honestly.
Yeah, and I could see a world where it's 14th.
Like, I agree. I think that if you ran a simulation of the team's defense 1,000 times, I think it would more times it would come out closer to like 17 than it would to 28 or 27. Yeah,
well, it's got a ceiling. It doesn't have a ceiling. It's got a high ceiling, whereas like the drop scheme just had no ceiling. Like, it was just like, you're never gonna be good doing this.
You're supposed to have a high floor playing a drop scheme.
But if you have the personnel.
But if you're terrible in the drop, then you're just like inviting people into the lane. It's like free points. It's just, it's a mess. But yeah, I mean, at the bottom line, I think that this team defensively is going to be capable of, is going to be really capable of forcing a lot more turnovers than they did last year. And I think that, you know, at minimum, that helps you be at least a little bit better than you were this past season. And I think that's what excites me the most is this team has a lot of athletes, and it goes back to where we started with that transition offense. And the more ways that you can find to get into that transition offense, I think the more efficient your offense is going to be and the better the team is going to be as a whole. I want to ask one quick last thing. I need a couple of quick official predictions from you about the Timberwolves season, so we can point back to this and make fun of each other for being drunk off the Kool-Aid when things do inevitably just get fucked up,
fall apart when they come out and lose to Houston by 35 in the game. In game,
am I reverse jinxing myself? that's for you to guess and me to know. But all right, what do you think the record will be? What do you think the record will be, and what do you think their like end of the regular season seed ends up being?
39-43, and I think they're ninth.
Okay.
What do you think? Interesting.
I think that they're going to be like 42-40, 42-40, or 43-39.
Oh yeah, you're setting yourself up now.
And I think they're going to be like I think they're going to be the eighth seed, honestly.
I think it's probably an obvious question, but that would be a resounding success, right? Which is a little bit sad.
I mean, is it crazy that I don't want to call it a resounding success?
No, it shouldn't be.
I mean,
being eight shouldn't be a resounding success.
This team has, in my opinion, I mean, I may be crazy for saying this, but in a vacuum, if you stripped away all the team names, all right, and all the history, like if you had just like a fantasy draft of all these players, and you had the Blazers, the Mavs, the Pelicans, the Grizzlies, the Kings, the Wolves, I think that you can make an argument that the Wolves are just as talented as any of those teams. Yeah. You know, Cat and Ant, I think, are almost on par with Dame and CJ. I think that they are on par for sure with Luka and Kristaps, because I think Ant is a lot better than Kristaps is right now. And I think that, I mean, Luka is Luka. But Kat, I mean, is, you know, Luka's a top 5 player in the NBA, top 7 player in the NBA. Kat's a top 15, 17 guy in the NBA. You know, and then you look at all, and then from there on, it's just depth. And the Wolves have pretty good depth. And then you also throw in that the Wolves' third banana in D'Lo is better than the third banana for Memphis, Sacramento, New Orleans, Dallas, and Portland. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could make an argument that Norm Powell is better than D'Lo, and I'm not going to argue with that. But for sure, Dallas. I mean, who is Dallas's third banana going to be?
Yeah, and for sure, like Memphis. Like, honestly,
that's what I'm saying is that I don't think the Clippers will be good.
I don't think the Clippers will be good. I think the Clippers are
going to be good still.
And we differ a little bit on Paul George, though. You're a Paul George guy. I think Paul George is very good, but I don't know if he can. I don't know. I don't want to get into a Clippers discussion, but I think we've already been going for an hour and a half. But
I think a resounding success would be being better than all of those teams I listed. Yeah. So you'd probably end up being the sixth seed. I think an eight seed is a successful season, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to get, like, caught up in hyperbolics, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where I'm at. Does Cat make an All-NBA team?
If they're a top six seed, he does. If not, he doesn't.
Wow, okay.
He should, but they just don't give it to guys who don't... like. And the problem is that the other three guys who we know who they are, and maybe you can throw Bam in there as well, like their teams are going to win 50 games, all of them.
All right, so if Utah will be the
first seed.
You think?
And that, yeah, I think they'll be the first seed again. They were very good last season, and I don't think they got any worse or that any of the West really got that much better. And like that's... do you know what I mean? Like, if Utah are a 1-2 or 3 seed, he's the only guy. Like, it's going to be Embiid and Jokic going to be first and second. Like, you can't keep Gobert off it if they're the first seed. And no one will, even though Kat is better than him.
Yeah, he is in a tough spot. Do you think Kat could get in as a four? As a forward?
Maybe. Because they changed the rules this year to something. I don't really pay that much attention to it, but they did change the rules a little bit.
I'm just pulling
at
straws at this point. I can't stand Rudy Gobert, man. It just...
yeah. Does anyone on the Timberwolves roster make any All-NBA, All-Star, All-Defense, you know?
I think Cat will be an All-Star this year.
I think he's probably an all-star. He would have been an all-star last season.
Assuming he stays healthy. Yeah, I mean, he's just so goddamn good.
And the coaches vote him in every time because the coaches have to game plan against him.
And the other thing is coaches understand context of every situation in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas media members don't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think Ant's going to be a playoff, an all-star this year.
No, I don't see it.
Not because I don't think he can, but because I just, even if he is good or good enough, I just don't think he will get the respect of the league because the league, that's a conversation for a later day. But, all right. You are on the over still. So you're on the over 35.5. I'm also on the over 35.5. I can't wait to be wrong because the team goes 47 and 35.
Don't. We've already pumped up their tires too much this episode. Then you've ended it with the team going 47 and 35. Come on.
Yeah, but you know, it's really going to suck when I walk into Target Center on Wednesday, sit down at my media seat, and then remember that Pat Bev is suspended for the game for
shit. He is too, isn't he? At least they've got Houston. Houston's a banana skin, though. It honestly feels like a banana skin, Houston. It feels
it's like
they
a fun-ass team. I think it's going to be one of those teams where, like, the record is not good, but they're going to be fun to watch in any given
feels day. Like Shengun is going to score 35 in an opening night win, and we're going to all just sink back into our holes.
And I think the vibes are too. I think the vibes are too good. I wouldn't be surprised if that game is, like, almost sold out.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either. I think Anthony Edwards is selling tickets, man. Like,
and I was in the Summer League jam session, which was a fucking practice, and the whole entire lower bowl was sold out. It was crazy.
Right.
It was good to talk to you, man.
It was. I'll let you go. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I know we've rambled on for a good... This might be our longest episode ever, but it was a good one. I feel it was a good one. So preseason is out of the way. Wednesday night is regular season, Thursday afternoon for me, and I can't wait. We will get together, either me and Jack or Kyle or someone, next weekend.
Maybe all three.
Yeah, maybe all three. We'll get a little Canis party going. So please head over to Canis Hoopus and follow Jack's work. You know there's going to be some heat coming out now that the season is almost underway. howsandgrowls.substack.com is where you'll find my stuff. Sign up to the newsletter. I've been pumping out content, man. So much content. So get over there. Sign up. Follow the journey. And yeah, Jack, thank you. And I will see everyone next week.